This is Senator Rodney Ellis, and the 2016 presidential election officially begins today here on Trib Live.
Thank you, Senator Ellis. This is Reeve Hamilton with the Tribcast, not Trib Live, but of course he knows that we are not sticklers for accuracy.
Give him a break. Here. He was riding his bike while he recorded that.
This is the first week of November, the first full week of November, and the beginning of the pre-2016 election era.
It's the first podcast of the Perry campaign for governor in 2016.
CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith is here.
I'm so psyched. We get another shot at Perry running for president.
Editor Emily Ramshaw is also here.
Good morning.
We're not going to talk about that?
No, we will, but everyone's going to be introduced first.
That's normally how we run
things. Your
intro
better than Senator Ellis got through his.
He got through his. It was short and sweet and somewhat accurate.
Evan, you could take a lesson from Rodney Ellis.
Yeah, bike.
Zing.
Bike to work.
Bike to work
burn.
A little more, won't
listen
you?
Listen to her knocking me.
Jim Henson.
I think Christy Hoppy has kept your desk exactly where it was.
Jim Henson of the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas.
I hear they keep it
Austin.
Short and sweet over the Dallas Morning News.
Well,
here.
Yes, in the spirit of the introduction, it's good to be here, Reed.
Reed. It's good to get on with it, Peeve.
Ha, ha, ha. All right, so obviously we are recording this the morning after the election.
Yes. The intro today should have been Karl Rove, actually.
Yeah, Karl Rove is still...
This is not the podcast.
Karl Rove is searching for Ohio.
I don't think this is the podcast. Go back and check. This is not the correct podcast.
Those microphones do not work.
is there any way to look at the election results as anything but a big win overall for the Democrats? It seems like across the board.
You mean nationally and in Texas?
Nationally, mostly. Although in Texas, even on the margins, it seems like the Democrats had a
Democrats
good night.
Picked up 7 in the House, mm-hmm. net 7 gain, saved Wendy Davis.
Gallego won.
Gallego won in Congress.
Says Gallego.
Well, it's still disputed.
Gallego. Yes.
So now it's 24-12, the delegation. But, the Democrats probably take the Gallego seat as a big victory last night. Kept Pete Sessions at his lowest percentage of the vote in being reelected ever.
I mean, I think when you start talking about numbers like that, you're stretching
concept
of big win.
I'm trying to give Peeve a good answer here.
Well, but I mean, part of what they're talking about with this big win is, I mean, look at the Hispanic vote numbers, right? I mean, the numbers that I saw last night were 40% of Hispanics voted for Bush, and then 30% voted for McCain, and then 20% voted.
Well, I thought it was 70-30. I thought Obama got 70% of the Hispanic vote and that Romney got 30%.
But the Hispanic vote has been dropping for Republicans over the last several elections.
Well, right. And, the reason that Obama, as we sit here recording this, they haven't called Florida yet, but they may very well soon, is because Obama got 60% of the vote of Hispanics in Florida.
Well, and that's
which was quite a bit higher than people projected.
I mean, I think you saw a lot of Republicans saying, early this morning saying, look at the trajectory. There's sort of a fear factor there. If we can't figure out how to harness this, we're in serious trouble.
Should we all just chant at once, demographics are destiny? Demographics
are
destiny.
Isn't that your favorite line?
No, it's not.
Is it that big a surprise, though? Haven't the Democrats won the popular vote in the country for the last two decades except for one election?
Yeah, mostly.
Really, isn't it amazing that Nate Silver was able to call this so accurately? I know everyone was down on him.
We were not down on Nate Silver.
No, we're all...
Jim Henson loves science.
How did the UT...
We favor science here.
The Tribune family, generally speaking, loves Nate Silver. And in fact, one of the members of the Tribune family proposed to him on Twitter last night. So in fact...
Only in Maryland and Maine.
Yeah. only certain states. Look, this race at the national level, and it does have relevance for Texas, I think, was the triumph of the verticals. This was not a broad victory for the president, but it was narrow and deep in the places where it needed to be, and it was constituency politics, it was coalition politics, realized to the extreme. African-American vote, 93% for Obama. Hispanic vote, 70% for Obama. Overwhelmingly, I think he won women by 10 points. Obviously, young people, Asian-Americans heavily for the president. Unions, especially in places like Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, significantly for the president. But the Hispanic thing where it has relevance, I think, for Texas is the big one, because that for a lot of Democrats with facile views of politics, they say, well, we'll just wait for the Hispanic majority to kick in and everything will be fine. We'll come back. It's not as easy as that for the reasons that Emily just said. Bush used to get 40% of Hispanics. Rick Perry gets 30 to 35% of Hispanics. And the reason is that temperamentally, many Hispanics in Texas are small-C conservative, pro-choice, pro-life because of their faith. They're more open to the view of the world that the Republicans have of the military because so many of their family members are in the military and overseas fighting. But I will say the Republicans have got a real problem here, right? I mean, if they're not talking in language that Hispanics at least feel is neutral, one of the first pronouncements I saw this morning about last night was that it all went bad for Romney when back in the primaries he tried to get to the right of Rick Perry on immigration and specifically on in-state tuition.
Wasn't that Charles Krauthammer that said that?
Well, he wasn't the only one who said it. But you yourself as our higher ed expert know that one of the big fights we're going to have in the session coming up is whether we kick in-state tuition to the curb, which is exactly the kind of issue that puts Republicans, if they're the ones who are the architects of that, puts a big gulf between them and much of the Latino community.
Now, contrast that with the fact that we have our first Hispanic U.S. senator from Texas, but he's not a Democrat.
Well, and he has, you know, a different cultural background, I would say, than mainline Hispanics.
Any less legitimate?
I don't think it's a matter of legitimacy.
He's a forcible Hispanic.
Well, it's not a matter. It's not a matter of legitimate or illegitimate. It's a matter of, you know, how do people view him and how do Hispanic voters, you know, consider him and can he reach out to them in a way that, you know, that matters and that is relevant to them? And I, you know,
your point is that the overwhelming Hispanic population in Texas is Mexican American, not Cuban American. He's Cuban American, and so is there a disconnect between his experience and their experience?
It's unclear to me that he has made an extraordinary effort to reach out to Hispanics in a broad-based way.
So what defenders of Cruz's in this respect would say is, what obligation does he have to reach out, in quotes, to Hispanics? Why is it not enough that he is Hispanic and therefore that he view the world with that as a part of his self-identity?
Well, he can, and that's fine, but that's not going to do the political work for him in the same way that, being a white guy doesn't do the political work for
I think
for
obligation
a white
is sort of a weird word.
Yeah, I think I think he has no obligation whatsoever.
Yeah, he has no obligation to even run.
What he has is an incentive. And the question is, can he respond to the incentive given the political profile that he's cut and given
can he be the one who is a bridge between the Republican Party?
Yeah, I mean considering the problems that their party is having with that part of the population.
But speaking of Texas senators though, how much egg is on John Cornyn's face this morning?
I think that's an interesting question. So, you know, we had the Sharon Angle and we had Ken Buck and we had the Witch in the last election. Those races all should have gone Republican and they didn't. And now we have Aiken and Murdoch. I mean, you can hardly blame Cornyn for their comments, but it's more this idea that it used to be that the person in that, I would say, that it used to be that the person in that job had a little bit more control over the outcome of those primaries.
They knew who their candidates were.
And that today they have no control.
We should say what that job is.
The job is as the head of the National Senatorial Campaign Committee, or National Republican Senate Committee, whatever the correct acronym is. He's basically the guy responsible for getting the Republican to take back the majority of the Senate, which they seemed like they were going to do last time and didn't. Seemed like they were going to do this time and didn't. Look,
but he failed to get out the message that they didn't want to make.
I think
the definition of rape.
Interestingly, I think the bigger problem for him, if you look at the races, so let's look at the six races as categories of 2, 2, and 2. Elizabeth Warren and Tim Kaine, you can hardly blame on Cornyn. Those were very strong Democratic candidates, you know, in seats that had been, you know, the Kaine seat was Democratic previously. The Warren seat, Brown seat, is only accidentally Republican, right? Aiken and Murdoch, you can hardly blame on Cornyn because he didn't tell them to say that stuff, and that's why they lost. They should have won. Where I think Cornyn's got an interesting problem is in North Dakota and Montana. It looks like John Tester is going to win that seat, hold that seat in Montana, and he'll be significantly below Romney in the share of the vote in Montana. And the woman in North Dakota? Democrats are going to hold that seat in North Dakota?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe Berg and Reberg, the North Dakota and the Montana Republicans, were not strong candidates. I mean, I think that may be a recruitment issue. What do you think about that?
I think that's fair. I mean, I think, but nonetheless, when you're in charge of the deal,
you own it. If it goes well, you get the credit. If you don't, you get the blame.
Right. I think if they had won, you know, the Democratic guys are certainly going to be taking credit for their successes. The person who, you know, is at the head of that is going to have to eat some of that. And it still goes back to this broader issue of Latinos. I want to go back to that for just a beat because I think we missed something important in that. You know, we talked about Florida. We talked about Cruz. And one of the things that taking Latinos and the Hispanic vote seriously is going to really entail is having a much more sophisticated understanding of what we're talking about when we talk about the Hispanic vote. So on one hand, you know, we can look at Florida and go, wow, he did really well among Hispanics, and that's a big shock. Well, if you look at the demographics, there's a much larger Puerto Rican population now in Florida than there traditionally has been. That's been growing for a while. Much more traditional Democratic constituency. There are demographic differences between younger generation Cubans and older generation Cuban Americans, and what their attitudes are and what their party identification is. And I think that there's still a tendency for us to look at this, you know, the whole demographics is destiny thing in much too sort of monotone a perspective when, and I think both parties are going to have to get much more nuanced about that. The Democrats are ahead of that, and it's something the Republicans are going to have to get much better at. And I think the Republicans are going to discover that with Ted Cruz when they put Ted Cruz out in front of Hispanic groups, and you know the Hispanic vote in Texas doesn't immediately flip because I don't think it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, are we seeing, what did we see of this trend in with local races last night?
Well, Jason Villalba winning the House race up in Dallas, beating Carol Kent, is another Hispanic Republican in the House.
Well, Jam Lozano,
holding on is a significant
former
a
Democrat,
significant
current Republican.
Thing. Well, but you know the idea
that was a Hispanic seat.
Hispanics can't win in the Republican Party.
Right, you can't lump them together.
And Garza lost.
Right, but John Garza losing in San Antonio is as much about the fact that John Garza shouldn't have won the last time in a district that was probably more of a Democratic district than a Republican district. He was kind of an accidental member.
Well, and there's a few of these.
DeMargo losing, I think, is maybe more interesting because, you know, Margo self-identified as Hispanic, but it was more the idea that Republicans generally can represent traditionally Hispanic Democratic areas. I personally was not thinking that Joe Moody was going to win. All the optimism among some Democrats, Joe Moody, I was just not buying. I was kind of surprised to see him win. And maybe it just tells you that it's very hard for a Republican to represent that community if it's a specifically Democratic.
Well, a post-election podcast is going to lend itself to a lot of overstatement, but I think one of the big overstatements will be things are very complicated. You know,
In El Paso. Oh, my God, the most screwed up delegation ever.
Understatements.
Yeah. Exactly.
Things actually run very smoothly there. Yeah. Everyone gets along.
El Paso is just very complicated.
I want to make like a claymation movie of the first meeting of the delegation, you know, getting back into the session. You know, here's Marissa and Naomi and Joe Moody. Hey, how's it going? Fine. Hey, how's it going? Fine. You know, that's a very...
And then the text messages start flying.
Back and forth, I know.
I think all that delegation does is text message.
Why are you choosing such a labor-intensive...
Why is claymation my...
technique? I would just go with a PowerPoint.
Don't hate my art, Peeve.
We're going to have to hire a claymation reporter.
But if Wendy Davis had lost, would you have just said, oh, well, she was an accidental Democrat in that seat?
I want to talk about this accidental Democrat or accidental winner. You know, I mean, at what point are you or aren't you accidental? I mean, a lot of people, and I was going to bring up Wendy Davis. I mean, a lot of people thought she was in, I know, good work, an accidental candidate last time. You know, clearly now looking like she's no longer an accidental candidate.
She's not, but I think the point that you're making is exactly borne out by the results. Had Garza won, he would not be an accidental member. But Garza was an anomaly in that district. Wendy Davis actually managed, it was easier for her last time to win because she was running against a guy who had ethics problems, Kim Brimer, who was not from the geographic base of the district. He was from Arlington rather than Fort Worth. She was not yet a controversial figure. She was not as widely known in the good but also the bad ways that exists. And Obama did better in Tarrant County last time than this time.
But there was also a libertarian in that race who really sort of split the difference and allowed her to eke out the
W. She had many more things baked into the cake for her last time.
Right.
This time she was running against a very conservative House member in a Tea Party year, from Fort Worth, no libertarian, and she had already, she's the lightning rod. She should have lost this race, but she won, and that says something. You got to respect her for having managed to make this thing work.
Well, I think we also have to.
I don't think she is accidental at all. Mm-hmm.
But I think we also have to take her, you know, their campaign's argument seriously, and we're going to have to look at that. And we're really going to miss the exit polls here, but we'll have to look at precinct turnouts, and we'll get more analysis of this. That, you know, they've argued all along that, you know, there were a lot more Black and Hispanic, you know, Democratic opportunity voters in that district.
You think Veazey helped her?
And I think Veazey probably helped her. I think a lot, you know, I think a lot of other factors helped her. And again, I'm not saying she didn't. I think that's a close district. I think they also benefited from, frankly, a not great candidate and a not great campaign. This, on the opposing side that was riven by opposition, by internal conflict.
This is the first time a Democrat has broken 50% in that district. She thinks she got like 50.08 or something percent of the vote.
So, it's significant.
Yeah, there's a lot of new building up there. There's a lot of new housing. There's, you know, and there are more middle class Black and Hispanic voters, I think, in that district than the census picked
up.
Now,
I had been hearing in the last couple of months from Democrats who are thinking that, you know, 2014 is going to be an uphill battle, but they're going to have to file people to run, that Wendy Davis might very well be the Democratic nominee for governor, that they might decide to run her statewide.
I mean,
I don't think that what happened last night necessarily dissuades them from thinking that.
No, you know, I mean, they put her up on this pedestal. The Democratic Party thinks that, you know, she is someone who's very charismatic.
She's very well spoken.
Right. You know, I do
think,
despite her W last night, that, you know, these ethics concerns that have been raised, you know, by the Shelton campaign, probably largely fueled by the Epstein crew, you know.
You think?
They have, you know, there are a lot of people behind that Shelton campaign.
She's referring to Epstein from Welcome Back, Cotter. So that we're clear in explaining.
You know, I do think that sort of dug up a lot of quote unquote dirt that somebody could, that could trail her down the line.
Dug up a lot of dirt that she then won on.
I'm not.
She won on that dirt.
Yeah. I'm not sure she won on that dirt.
I think she overcame it.
I think she won on a lot of people, you know, not really paying attention to that messaging.
Well, to use Evan's metaphor, I mean, that'll be baked in the cake next time.
Mm-hmm. The dirt.
Right? I mean, that's one thing about,
well, she'll be
about
prepared
it getting out
it.
There. It'll be there. And I think they were, you know, I think they were
it'll
reasonably
be her Reverend
prepared
right.
for it this time.
Right. But we also now have, you know, a few more years of her being an attorney and having clients and being in the legislature.
So,
I mean, you know.
We don't know yet whether she'll draw a 2-year or a 4-year term, right? So if she draws a 4-year term, she could run next time and it would be penalty free. Look, the Democrats are going to have to figure out what to do. Those 2014, I alluded to Perry in 2016 at the beginning of this podcast. I do believe that 2016 presidential campaign began last night at 11:13, a minute after they called the race for Obama. 2014, the 2014 campaigns are absolutely in earnest happening now. And that's going to be the next big question. You know, Michael Lee, the Dallas lawyer who is heavily involved with the Democrats, tweeted a picture of a Castro in 2014 coffee mug yesterday or the day before. I think that's fantasy. I don't think Mayor Castro is going to run for governor in 2014. But I think the point here is the Democrats are certainly thinking about those races. And if not the Castros, then where they go?
Kirk Watson?
It does raise the point that Democrats fantasize in terms of coffee mugs.
Yeah. What does that tell you?
Which is about where we
Michael
are.
Michael Lee, get a hobby. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think the election, the 2016 race started until 11:20 after Megyn Kelly had walked down the hallway and convinced Karl Rove that maybe Obama had lost Ohio.
Yeah.
But what about the other side? What does it mean for Perry and Abbott and everyone else in the Republican side here? It's actually, you know, good news for their political prospects, right?
Oh, you know, it's goodish, yeah. I mean,
good-esque.
You know, I mean, that seems to be the conventional wisdom that with Obama
that's
in the
what
White
we're all
House,
about here.
It clears
He's
it.
The straw
I
man.
You know,
yeah.
That
although,
it
you know,
clears it for the Republicans.
The conventional wisdom, speaking of it, has been that if Obama won, that Perry would be more inclined to run for re-election as governor and more inclined to run for president in 2016. Mm-hmm. And so from Abbott's perspective, last night might not have been...
That's been their messaging, yeah.
A huge help. I think that you have a lot of ambition. Look, I've said all along, I think we agree on this to some degree, all of us here, that there are a lot of ambitious Republicans whose ambition has been pent up for the last 10 years.
I don't agree with that. No, of course not.
And I think that a lot of them...
That's yet another understatement.
A lot of them want to have an opportunity to run for something else, and if Dewhurst and Perry stay frozen in place, then the cork is kept in the bottle. And I don't think that... a lot of Republicans just don't want that to happen.
But who would Abbott sue if Romney had won?
Well, actually, Abbott tweeted yesterday that if Romney won, and whether he was sincerely optimistic or not, he tweeted that he was. He was saying, you know, all these lawsuits can, all these lawsuits are worth it against the federal government, and if Romney wins, they'll all go away. Was his point?
Right. Well, never mind.
We're going to need a tax increase to pay for all these lawsuits.
Hey, is this a medical school dig?
Speaking of which, well, wait a minute. Speaking of which, that's actually a pretty significant thing. You know, so the Republicans who are all for local control should actually be celebrating the fact that both in Austin and in San Antonio, on the ballot were initiatives that required a tax increase to pay for things that the state did not necessarily have the money to pay for or the inclination to pay for. Pre-K in San Antonio, medical school in Austin, both passed. Both are tax increases. In theory, our Republican pals around here are going to say, great, system worked, local control. What's interesting is when you ask a lot of Republicans about local control, they say, I'm for local control up until the point you start talking about taxes.
As long as I'm controlling the locality.
I don't want to get in the way. So really, I think that's an interesting element of this, is the degree to which those tax-focused local initiatives got on the ballot and succeeded.
Well, I can tell you what's going to happen with that, though. I mean, Susan Combs has been lining up for this. You know, she's had, I think, getting interesting advice from people.
So you think she's going to oppose those things?
Well, she's already doing it. I mean, the report that they issued a couple weeks ago was all about, you know, alerting Texans to what it really meant to increase their local tax burdens.
But what can she do now? Nothing. She can run against it.
Right. Well, that's what she'll do. She'll say,
the same, you know, people will come back and say, yeah, but you're giving money to Formula One.
Yeah, well, but she'll still say, yeah, but that's private enterprise. That's different. I mean,
it's economic development. But yeah, of course, Kirk Watson, you know, will come back and say, well, they're associating $2 billion in economic development with the medical school.
Right. Yeah, well, of course, you know, the medical school hasn't been built yet. It just got its
taxes. But it won't.
Taxes.
And it won't just be the medical school. It'll be, I mean, I think all but one of those bond issues.
Yeah, almost all the bonds passed.
You know, so I mean, the broader argument that Combs has been building is that we need to now that the next front line in the big tax and you know, taxation strangling people's freedom is at the local level, that people need to be more aware of what all those lines on their bills and on their property taxes really mean. And I think if you look at that report closely, she's clearly carving out a political space to occupy for whatever she's going to do next. And this can actually be pretty easily fed into that. We all know they don't have to be, you know, comprehensive in their account of this, shall we say. They can just say, see, everyone's taxes are going up. Look at your local tax bills.
I'm a fiscal conservative.
Your tax bills are going up. They're not going to say, and you voted for it last time, so it's your own damn fault. They're going to say, see, you know, all these people are coming to you, and all they keep doing is asking for more and more and more. We want you to be more aware, and I'm your pal.
So the big winner of the 2014 election, Susan Combs.
Well, I mean, I don't
straight
think she's the big
winner. Straight from Jim Henson's mouth.
But I do think she benefits. I do think that Republicans will have no problem benefiting from this, and that the argument that, you know, somehow this is local control is not going to go very far.
And what about Kirk Watson? I mean, obviously he had a lot of his legacy sort of staked on this tax election. Should we now put him in the 2014 Democratic primary with Julian Castro and Wendy Davis?
I wouldn't put him out of it. I mean, you know, I mean, it's obviously a pretty clear field for Democrats right now. I mean, as we talked about the earlier Republican crowded field, I mean, the Democratic field is the photographic negative of that.
That video of him going down the slide is really going to be good for his campaign presence.
Everyone likes a sense of fun in your campaign.
I think what Watson would say to you if you were sitting here is, tell me who I'd be running against.
Yeah.
I think if you
we
if,
just did.
If you, but if you could tell him he'd be running against Perry, he might have a different answer than if he were running against Abbott. Maybe not. But I think he might have a different view of it based on what he knew about who was the nominee.
Well, and I wouldn't assume it's the governor. I mean, it's the governorship. Maybe he wants to be lieutenant governor. Maybe he wants to run for, you know, I mean, he's run for attorney general. Lieutenant governor would not be a bad gig for Watson.
Well, if Sadler is any example, they better start raising money now.
Do you think Sadler's problem was the amount of time he had to raise money?
No.
What other race have we not touched on? Obviously, so Canseco was not conceded.
I just want to note that as brutal as this group can be, everybody got silent and decided not to kick Paul Sadler anymore.
What's the point?
We are a nice group.
That was an interesting little pause. Like, we're just not going to beat up on him anymore.
Canseco has not conceded. Good one. Although it appears to me that's what passes for a good one this morning. it appears to me that, and I think to all of us here, that there are too many votes outstanding. Gallego's lead is too big to what is this? This is
it. Well, you don't know how many more boxes of early votes that they've got stashed
right,
away.
They're going to find in the trunk of somebody's Impala, right? No, I know. I don't think this is anything. I mean,
you know, it seems Gallego like won. Somebody needed to say something about voter fraud this right. time around.
Gallego
in Texas.
Won. That's what appears to have happened. Gallego won.
And Gallegos won in Houston.
Right. And I just got a text from Ross that passing along a note that Carol Alvarado is inviting you to join her and members of the Mario Gallegos family for a very special announcement.
Are you inviting me?
Not well, all of us. I think the royal you.
You can come.
I'm assuming that is to say that she's going to get in. We think, of course, the special.
You don't think she's
going to
endorse someone else?
No. But we think Sylvia yeah. Garcia, the former commissioner, Harris County commissioner, is going to get in, right?
That's what everyone
and
says.
And I heard some story that one of the Noriegas may get in, very possibly Mrs., who is a city council member in Houston, as opposed to Mr., who ran for the Senate unsuccessfully against Sean Cornyn. We'll have to see what happens, but I think the assumption is Democrats hold that Senate seat, right? Heavily Democratic district.
Yeah, any rumors Democrat. About when they'll be able to take control of it, though, and when the special election will be? And
up to the governor.
Perry has to set it, right?
Yeah. What's the timeline on that?
I think
after a few key votes.
Yeah. Yeah. After they've used the two.
Well, I think he does have a certain amount of time. I can't remember what the time is.
Well,
somebody text Ross.
He's driving. Don't text him.
Flying.
This is a safety right. trip cast.
We should invite Kate Galbraith next time.
We will. But Emily, you've been looking at what the Obama election means for Texas more broadly, right? Policy-wise. Does it mean anything?
Yes. Stay tuned till tomorrow.
Oh, we can't talk about that?
No, I mean, you know, I think there are a whole range of issues, but, you know, for me in particular, obviously, I've been looking at health reform. And a lot of Republicans in the legislature and also at HHSC have basically sort of been biding their time and saying, you know, we're not going to really roll out big elements of this until we know who the president is because, oh, by the way, Mitt Romney's going to repeal, you know, federal health reform. Now that that's clearly not going to happen, you know, I think there are going to be a lot of questions asked, you know, all right, how much longer can you drag your feet on this? You know, how quickly are you going to roll this out? So, but I think not just for healthcare, but, you know, issues around immigration, issues around higher education. You and I were talking about a little bit yesterday, you know, issues around the EPA and some of these lawsuits. I think, you know, there are questions of, you know, what are the next 4 years going to look like? Do we have to start taking action we were dragging our feet on?
Right. I would say for higher education, the Obama administration has particularly cracked down on for-profit colleges, which is not something people expected Romney to do. So, I mean, continue to look for that. Also, he's been pretty aggressive about setting high goals for college completion totals, so just the amount of people getting out of college with degrees, which is something Texas has also been big on, but Texas and the nation have been struggling with getting kids out of college lately, so look for that push to continue. He's also shown a light on, I think a lot of this is Jill Biden's influence, but they have a strong community college emphasis,
right.
Sort of like we have not seen in previous administrations. And Texas is one of those states where almost everybody, I mean, just the amount of students, it's an overwhelming majority of students start in community college and then sort of work their way up to the university level or not. A lot of them drop out. But so that's interesting. It's good for the community colleges in that way. Jim, anything else that you think is worth noting?
Well, I think there's another interesting kind of, you know, broad overarching theme here, which is, you know, now that this election has been decided, we're going to see another round of Texas, of the Republican leadership in Texas government having to play both sides of this, because if the economy does begin to pick up and the Obama administration is able to, you know, begin to funnel a bit more money into infrastructure projects, things like water, roads, et cetera, which they've talked about doing but haven't had the means to do because of the recession and the budgetary constraints in the first term, then Texas is in the position that it often is. We're standing up and complaining about the federal government, all they do, but then, you know, being perfectly happy to take federal transportation money, federal infrastructure money, and I think that'll be an interesting set of questions over the next term as we try to face some of those issues. Things like trains and
planes
and highway money.
Both of those.
Yes, John Candy.
Yeah. If you have any questions. Aww. Or any fond memories of John Candy, or any comments, you can email them to Tribcast at texastribune.org.
Boy, you and the senator.
It was just, a late night.
Just giving some love to the senator, aren't you?
That's right.
Or you can email it to triblive at...
triblive@rodneyellis.com. on behalf of Evan, Emily, Jim, and our producer Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
University of Texas, Texas Tribune poll had the gap between Romney and Obama exactly correct. Really? 16 points.
He should have entered the office poll.
He did.
I did.
Which I believe I won.
Really?
Damn, I thought I was close. I only got one wrong.
Yeah, I got all right.
God.